Blog Talk Radio.
Live from New York City. I have as my special guest Miss Alelia Bundles, an author and award-winning network TV producer. But first, we're having technical difficulties. As soon as I get her, we'll get on the line. Thank you. Alelia? Alelia?
Hi, can you hear me?
Ah, yes, good. This is Mike Dinwiddie.
Okay.
I've got you now. This is so wonderful.
I'm so glad to be here.
Yeah, we're broadcasting live from New York and Washington, D.C. This is quite
wonderful. That's right.
I have as my special guest tonight Miss Alelia Bundles, an author and an award-winning network news producer for more than 20 years. But tonight, for the next half hour, I'll be speaking with Alelia about a biography she wrote regarding her great-great-grandmother, Madam C.J. Walker. The book is entitled On Her Own Ground, The Life and Times of Madam C.J. Walker. And we're also going to talk about a text that she's working on now called, well, I'm going to give it a title, Joy Goddess. Is that correct?
That's right. That's the title.
The story of Alelia Walker, Madam Walker's daughter, who was Alelia Bundles' great-grandmother. Lots of names here to get used to. So
that's right. Lots of Alelias.
Welcome to the Gist of Freedom.
My pleasure. I'm so glad we're going to have this conversation this evening.
I'm really excited about it, too, because, you know, I'm a big fan of your work. I think your writing is beautiful, and the history you wove into it is just so rich and full. Anyone who's really interested in learning about that period in African-American history should start there. But I wonder, is there something you'd like to – well, first, the thing I want to ask is, what made you decide you wanted to tell the story of the Walker women?
Well, you know, to tell you the truth, I a little bit was drag kicking and screaming. Not entirely, but, you know, as most young people, you want to have your own identity. So I did not really want my identity to be only Madam Walker's great-great-granddaughter. And, in fact, I was more interested in Alelia Walker and her Harlem Renaissance friends and parties and all of that for many, many years. But when I was in graduate school at Columbia in journalism school, Phil Garland, the only black woman on the faculty at the time, sat down with me. We talked about my paper, my master's paper, and at the end of the conversation with my very cliched suggestions, she said, "Your name is Alelia. Do you have any connection to Madam Walker and Alelia Walker?" And I kind of reluctantly said yes. And Phil looked at me, and she said, "That's what you're going to write your paper about." And, of course, I'm so grateful. And as a professor, you know what a difference a professor can make in someone's life.
Well,
Phil validated the story for me.
I'm grateful as well for Phil Garland pushing you to do that because that was really, really important. And we're now in an era where it's really important to tell stories of our families. They're actually narratives that really tell us our history and tell us the culture. And you have a very particular and special history to tell and to share with us. So that was your paper in grad school, but then when did you decide you would do a biography of Madam Walker?
Well, you know, I had to go to work, so I spent my 20s working as a producer for NBC News and then ABC News, and on weekends and holidays and vacations, I would do research. So through the years, fortunately, some of the people, some of the wonderful icons of the Harlem Renaissance and a few people who actually had known Madam Walker were still living, family, friends, and other people I tracked down. I interviewed them during the 1980s and wrote a young adult book that came out in 1991, believe it or not, the first book that had ever really been written about Madam Walker, and then was lucky to get a contract to write the bigger book On Her Own Ground, which came out in 2001.
Fantastic. Question, what kinds of questions did people ask you who didn't know about Madam Walker, and what was like kind of the nutshell you told them about her life and who she was?
Well, you know, of course, the big thing that many people believed was they thought, oh, Madam Walker, isn't she that woman who invented the hot comb? And I was very ambivalent about that whole hot comb thing. And when I discovered that she did not invent it, it was really quite good for me. I was happy to find that out because that wasn't, to me, that wasn't a really, you know, the thing that I really wanted to spend a whole lot of time on. What I was much more interested in was, you know, the fact that she was a pioneer of the hair care industry, that she was an early 20th century woman entrepreneur, and also that she was an arts patron and a political activist. So I think people were really quite surprised to discover that she was very involved in the anti-lynching movement. She was even considered a black subversive by a spy, a black spy from the War Department. But, this whole idea of prosperous, successful African-Americans at the turn of the last century is something that even now people don't realize.
It's really incredible how much of that history isn't told and how much people don't understand how complicated and wonderful it was and what an impact Madam Walker had, not only in her activism, but through her business. So would you want to talk about that a little bit, about how she had her agents?
Absolutely. Well, you know, when you consider that she was born in 1867 on the same plantation where her parents had been enslaved before the Civil War, first child in her family to be born free, but was orphaned at seven, and by the time she was 20, she was already a widow with a daughter. She didn't have any, you know, real extensive formal education. So she was a washerwoman, but by the time she was 38, she had started a hair care products company. She came upon a formula for a shampoo and an ointment that healed scalp disease. And while I won't go into great detail about that, you just imagine what kind of hygiene was going on when people didn't have indoor plumbing and electricity. But she developed this product line and sold it at a time when there really wasn't a hair care or cosmetics industry. 100 years ago, women like Madam Walker and Elizabeth Arden and Helena Rubinstein were really the pioneers of that industry. So she began to sell the product door to door. She traveled throughout the United States selling her products. Her third husband was Charles Joseph Walker. He helped her with some of the early advertising and mail order business. Eventually, she settled in Indianapolis in 1910, where she built actually her second factory. And then her daughter persuaded her to have a presence in Harlem, and they opened up a home and an office there in 1913. And by then, they were well on their way to the success that people know about now.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned her daughter, Lilia, who became Alelia. And I'd like to start to talk about her a little bit because I know that's your interest. You've done this wonderful text on Madam C.J. Walker, and now you're looking at the joy goddess of Harlem. So tell me what made you decide this is the time to do this story.
Well, you know, as I said, I was always – initially I was much more interested in Alelia Walker. Now, obviously, I have the same name, so that would make me interested in her. our birthdays are almost on the same day. Mine is June 7th, hers is June 6th. And as a young person who loved writing and who loved to read, I was fascinated that she had known Langston Hughes and Countee Cullen and Zora Neale Hurston. So I was really sort of drawn to her and her whole Harlem Renaissance era. I think for many people, the Harlem Renaissance is a favorite period of history. Madam Walker was much more complicated, so it took me a little while and some maturity to really understand the complexity. But Alelia Walker was my first interest. And then as I began to write my biographies of Madam Walker, I developed the relationship between the two women. I actually thought I was going to write a double biography, but about a third of the way through, I realized that Alelia Walker needed her own platform. In fact, that had been sort of the story of her life. She was always overshadowed by her mother. And with this new book, with Joy Goddess, I'm really trying to tell her story and to allow her to be fully developed and the fascinating person that she was.
I was fascinated by what an impact she had on Madam Walker's business and how her vision of going to the East Coast and West Coast and finding properties and really expanding the company really was something that her mother really thought was important.
You know, I think if she had not had the mother that she had, I mean, obviously it's hard to untangle the relationship, but she was such a flamboyant spirit and she was a really well-traveled person. And so she had seen things that most other people hadn't seen. Obviously, her mother's money allowed her to make real estate investments, but she was very visionary about where she bought property. She bought property in Los Angeles in 1912. She was the one who said, let's have a presence in Harlem, and bought property there in 1913. So she really could see some of sort of a next generation vision that her mother might not have had. Now, her mother obviously was very smart, but she could see things in the future and see what the hot spots were. She was the hip one of the two. And so she was the one who said, we've got to be in Harlem. It was a very wise decision because within 3 years, Madam Walker herself had moved to Harlem because that was where the culture was and where the politics. Madam Walker wanted to be in the center of things, and her daughter had provided that space for her.
That's amazing and incredible. I'm Michael Dinwiddie. I'm speaking with Alelia Bundles, the author of On Her Own Ground, The Life and Times of Madam C.J. Walker. And we're talking about her daughter right now, Alelia Walker. And the name Villa Loaro is famous in the Walker story. Can you tell us a little bit about that, what Villa Loaro was?
Absolutely. Well, for those of the, you know, the people in the audience who are living in New York, you may have visited or seen Villa Loaro, which was the home that Madam Walker built in Irvington, New York, a town in Westchester County that's between Dobbs Ferry and Tarrytown. If you're going north, it's on the left side.
Uh-oh, we're having a little technical difficulty.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, are you back? Now you're back, yes.
Okay. So Loaro comes from Lelia Walker Robinson, Lewaro. Robinson was her first husband. And the opera singer Enrico Caruso visited the house. Both women were real opera lovers. And when Caruso visited the house, he said it reminded him of homes in Italy and suggested the name. He knew that Alelia Walker was her mother's inspiration and thought that was a perfect name for the house. And it's, you know, the house is still standing. It's a National Historic Landmark. It's currently owned by Harold and Helena Doley. And we're actually working on a major project right now trying to get this house to be part of the National Park Service. So that's one of the initiatives that I'm working on with Madam Walker's legacy.
Is there anything we can do as listeners to help that happen?
Absolutely. Well, you know, I'm on Facebook, and I have a website, AleliaBundles.com, AleliaBundles.com. People can reach me through my website. They can reach me at Alelia Bundles and at Madam C.J. Walker on Facebook and send me a message. We will be giving a lot more information within the next few weeks. But I'd love to hear from anybody who's interested. It's such a wonderful, magical place, and we really want it to be open to the public.
That's really important, too. It's also a landmark for African Americans to understand and know that we've been in this country, we've been prosperous in this country, we've succeeded in this country. Madam Walker was, in fact, the first a woman millionaire, I understand, the first self-made woman millionaire. Is that correct?
That is, you know, that's correct. And it's, there are, but it's very hard to sort of pinpoint this because I know that Leslie Gist has also done research on Mary Pleasance in San Francisco, who probably also was a millionaire in the late 19th century. So there may be a few other African-American women whose estates were valued at $1 million. We know that Madam Walker was the first American woman to make $1 million on her own in the kind of manufacturing business that she had.
Oh, one of the things that we know, too, about Madam Walker is that she was able to pass her business on. Would you talk about that in terms of your family, the legacy, and how long the Walker Manufacturing Company was in your family?
Sure, absolutely. Well, four generations of women in my family were involved with manufacturing hair good products, and my mother was wise enough to encourage me to follow my own dreams to become a journalist. And so now my real way of keeping the legacy alive is to write books about her. I'm president of the Madam Walker Family Archives, which is the largest private collection of Madam Walker photographs and clothing and furniture and letters and all of those kinds of things. And we also are very involved with the Madam Walker Theater Center in Indianapolis and really excited that this week the Dance Theater of Harlem is performing there.
Oh, fantastic. That's wonderful. Your mother was pretty wise. She knew that you were not going to be a great hair care executive.
and I think she felt that that was something she had to do. It was expected of her. And my father actually was president of another black hair care company. He worked for a while for the Walker Company, but then was hired away to become president of Summit Laboratory. So when I was growing up, both parents were executives in the hair care business. But it wasn't my passion, and I just am so grateful to my mother for allowing me to, to find my own way, to have my own identity, my own career, but then to also be able to develop the skills that allows me to tell Madam Walker's story and to celebrate her life and also Alelia Walker's life.
Well, let me ask you another question, which is, what does Madam Walker's journey say to women today, African-American women and all women, about their ability to transform their lives?
You look at how she started, that total deprivation, no education, and we see all the things that are happening in our society today. The economy is bad. We have horrible public schools in many cities, and it looks as if things could be very bleak. She had all of those problems and worse, and I think she was able to connect to people who mentored her, even though she was a poor washerwoman. Women of her church reached out to her. I think we see the importance of mentorship through her. She was in the choir in her church. She had a little talent the ability to sing, and she allowed that to help her make connections with other people. You always have to find the angle. You have to find the thing that will help you connect to other people, and then you have to work hard. I mean, she said the secret to her success was that she worked hard and that she promoted herself. So I think that we look at these things, we get inspiration from her, but ultimately it comes down to having a great product, having a great idea, understanding how to empower yourself and other people.
It sounds as though they did a great job with you.
I'm just really lucky. I'm lucky that I had the parents that I had because, I really didn't grow up knowing about Madam Walker in the way that I do now. I mean, yes, my mother went to work in the wonderful Walker Building every day. Both of my parents were educated people who really encouraged us to succeed. But the lessons of Madam Walker's life came as I began to study her. But I'm really lucky that I had parents who pushed me.
Well, one of the things that I found fascinating in looking at your story is that many people have family stories and their family secrets and surprises and things we don't really know how to tell. What made you decide that you could tell the truth about your family and just uncover everything you could find?
Well, you know, that's my mom again. My when I was in graduate school, my mom was quite ill with cancer, and we knew she was terminal, and I was at home for the Christmas holidays trying to write this paper about Madam Walker and, you know, visiting my mom in the hospital and knowing that she really did not have the energy for me to do the kind of interviews that you'd normally be able to do. But I, you know, I was able to share with her that I was learning some things and that Madam Walker didn't really have the fairy tale life that lots of other people thought she did. And there were some divorces and, you know, some hidden marriages and a few scandals. And I remember saying to my mother, I said, Mommy, what am I going to do with these things? Because other people have a certain expectation. And she sat in her hospital bed. She looked at me and she said, tell the truth, baby. It's all right to tell the truth. And that was one of our last conversations. And I have to tell you, I'm so grateful. That was such a gift from her that I didn't have to go through what so many people go through about not being able to be honest, not being able to tell the truth about family secrets.
That is quite a story and quite a moving one, I have to tell you. You know, believe it or not, we're drawing close to the end of our time here. I want to check and see if there's anything that we haven't talked about that you really want to talk about, that we haven't covered or mentioned.
Well, you know, I want to come take your class about James Rees Europe. Some of the people that you teach about are people who I've discovered were very good friends of Alelia Walker's. And I'm really in this new book, Joy Goddess, which should be out in early 2013, trying to develop the relationship between the two women. And one of the themes that runs through their lives is music. So all of these fabulous musicians at the turn of the last century, the early 1900s, James Rees Europe, UB Blake, Noble Sissle, Georgette Harvey, all of the people that we know about, Duke Ellington, these are people they knew. So I'm also trying to tell that story about how Alelia Walker was inspired early in her life by music, by her mother being in the choir, and how these two women ultimately used their money and their influence as patrons of the arts to really encourage young African Americans.
Well, you've gotten me excited all over again. We got to go another hour or two because encountering David Levering Lewis's When Harlem Was in Vogue really helped me understand that period well. And The Dark Tower, which was a brainchild of Alelia's. You want to talk about that a little bit, what that was?
Sure, sure. Well, you know, both women really love to host parties. And so Alelia Walker has the reputation as the one who gave parties, but she really learned it from her mother, who loved to have extravagant parties. Two of the most extravagant ones were parties in 1914 and 15 that she hosted for her daughter. So Alelia really learned how to party from her mom. But of course, when you put it in the context of the 1920s and Prohibition and the Harlem Renaissance, Alelia Walker was quite an impresario and took things to the next level. The Dark Tower itself was on one floor of her townhouse on 136th Street in Harlem, right near Lenox Avenue, the same property where the Count A. Cullen Library now is located. But she turned it over. She named it the Dark Tower after Count A. Cullen's column that he wrote for one of the black publications of the era. And she opened it up for parties, and everybody came, from Count A. and Langston to Carl Van Vechten to French designers to European and African royalty. But that really wasn't her first foray. She had done this fabulous wedding in 1923 for my grandmother, May, her first wedding to a man she didn't want to marry, but it was quite an extravaganza, called the $1 Million Wedding. And that was just Alelia Walker warming up for some of the fabulous parties that she gave during the 1920s. She also had an apartment on Edgecombe Avenue overlooking the park, and that became kind of her quiet place, her place away from the hoopla of Lenox Avenue, and those parties were often written about in letters and in books that people wrote about during the Harlem Renaissance. And she was such a fabulous, iconic character of the era that most novels that were written during the time have some character who's based on her.
Right. Well, the picture I have of her is always wearing a turban.
Right. Absolutely. Well, you know, and I laugh about the turbans because that really was one of her signatures. And I think, you know, imagine you're the daughter of the woman who made $1 million selling hair care products. Your hair cannot always be perfect. And so sometimes you might have to default to a turban.
Well, you know, so talking about perfect hair, maybe you want to talk about your grandmother and how she became your grandmother, how she became a walker. That's kind of an interesting story.
Well, that is an interesting story. My grandmother, May, actually was adopted by Alelia Walker. Alelia Walker was married 3 times and had no biological children. But May's grandmother, her biological grandmother, lived across the alley from the Walker factory in Indianapolis, and Madam Walker first saw her. She had, my grandmother had braids that went down past her waist, braids that she could sit on because she had, you know, quite a bit of Native American heritage in her family. And she traveled for a while as a model with Madam Walker demonstrating what her main product, which was Madam Walker's wonderful hair grower. And so she said, well, you know, look what my products can do. And then and both women were always very charitable to young people, and they reached out. But May was the only person who was legally adopted. And her mother was actually living when she was adopted. They promised her biological mother that they would educate her. They sent her to Spelman College, where she, I found at graduation, received academic awards. So she was quite a bright young woman. And then she worked with the Walker Company. So that, you know, that's the story. And I think I'm just glad that that connection happened. And I hope that Madam Walker and Alelia Walker are glad that they have a great-granddaughter through adoption who's able to tell their story. I think they made the right choice with May.
I think so, too. I really do. And, you know, I always thought you knew May, but you corrected me and let me know that she died right before you were born, right? About three
right.
years before you were born. But in reading the biography of Madam Walker, it feels like you really did know May. So I just want to say that's a real tribute to your writing and to the way you bring her alive in the story.
Well, I thank you. And she still is a bit of a mystery to me. As I'm writing this new book, I'm reading a lot of her letters that I had not really had a chance to read when I was writing the other book. I focused on Madam Walker's life up to 1919 and sort of superficially looked at the other women's lives in the next generations. Now I'm immersed in their lives, and I'm finding she's sort of a much livelier personality than I actually realize, and that's kind of a fun discovery.
Well, I love that her name was Fairy May Bryant.
Oh, yes. Isn't that great? Isn't that great?
And that's what she looked like, a little fairy. And the other thing that was incredible about Madam Walker and her daughter, picking May to be a model in an era when the beauty standard was very light skin, and May was a lovely, lovely brown chocolate cocoa.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh. Absolutely. And, yeah, I'm so glad you noticed that, too, because that was Madam Walker put her own image on her products, and she was a brown woman.
That's
and
right.
May was a brown girl, and I think that was very conscious on their part.
Yes. Again, I just want to thank you. This has just been so wonderful talking to you and getting more history and more of the sense of this. I cannot wait for your book, Joy Goddess, the story of Alelia Walker. And for folks who haven't read it, they should really pick up On Her Own Ground, The Life and Times of Madam C.J. Walker by Alelia Bundles. Alelia, thank you so much for this wonderful evening.
Oh, thank you. I can't wait to visit you at NYU and speak to your students.
That will be amazing and wonderful. This is Michael Dinwiddie. Thank you for joining us tonight on The Gist of Freedom. Until next week, take care.